have to be what?
Twice.
What?
Twice as good.
Twice as good as them to get half of what they have.
Howdy, y'all. It's another episode of the Twice as Good podcast. Hello to all of our listeners, lovers, and compatriots around the world. We are your hosts, Dallas DK Kyle and MJ Craig. And welcome back. How have you been, MJ?
I've been good. It's been a 3-day weekend. It snowed yesterday. And we're plugging away at those job opportunities and just trying to find one that sticks. How are you?
I'm doing really well. You know, I'm a little saddened by Melania's choice in dress this year for the inauguration, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But all is well. Trying to stay cozy, dreading going into work tomorrow, but just want to give a big shout out to the OG, MLK. We just want to salute you, give you a fist up, and a big old shout out. Because
and
it's your
apologize.
Day.
Apologize for the fact that your day has been shrouded in tomfoolery. Tomfoolery, disgust, and the fact that I believe earlier today, someone at some point during this inauguration had the audacity to mention your name. And inappropriate. So, you know, I feel like we as Americans should be apologizing for the fact that, like, you even came up today. Because I understand that it's your day, but, like, we're not going on the right path. The path of righteousness that you tried to lead us on, that's not where we are. And for that, I am so sorry. Honestly, I feel like you kind of got set up that your day at every 4 years aligns with the inauguration, because it's really a toss-up as to whether or not that's respectful as to who the person is. It's really a toss-up, and I don't think that's okay. Like, we really only get, like, 2 or 3 holidays as Black people. We get MLK, we just got Juneteenth, and we get Black History Month, and it's not like we get the whole month off. So it's really fucked up that the big one that we get also coincides with the inauguration every 4 years. It's kind of fucked. But yeah.
Well,
I'm off my soapbox.
We're going to get into that, but we do just want to honor MLK on his special day. I definitely want to honor the MLK in his latter years. I think that I Have a Dream and all the previous speeches are definitely one for the books, but my favorite MLK is the MLK that was going to the worker strike, who went to Ghana and Jamaica and met with Marcus Garvey and was really turning the corner on his activism and the issues that he was passionate about. He was passionate about not only integration of society, but also the state of Black people in America and their progress and economic prosperity. And I am saddened that we couldn't see the full reality of who that MLK would have been and gone too soon. So yeah. On this day,
was just issued a pardon. So we love that. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. My favorite MLK is the one who talks about riots, because I feel like politicians love quoting MLK when an uprising happens. They love being like, be peaceful, blah, blah, blah. They love finding every single quote about peaceful protesting and nonviolence. And I'm like, this man also said very clearly out of his mouth that a riot is the language of the unheard. But y'all never want to use that quote, huh? Uh-huh. But, you know, let's move on.
Open up your television Bibles to scandal, ladies and gentlemen. We are in season 2, episode 8. And happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
That's not what it was. No, we're not going to do that.
Happy birthday.
We're not going to do that. No.
To you.
That's not what it was.
So this week on Scandal, we are talking all about the assassination attempt of Fitzgerald Grant III. And we wanted to talk about this episode mainly because in Scandal, it's important to note that there are 3 elections that take place. However, there are only 2 inaugurations that are, 2 inaugurations that are quoted.
No, there's only 2 elections. We see 1 election in flashbacks, then Fitz gets reelected,
and
then Millie gets elected.
Isn't that 3?
No, because we don't actually see the, like, Fitz's election is not part of the timeline of the show the first time. It's a flashback.
Okay, so we wouldn't count that.
No, because the timeline of the show is over a year after he's been in office. Okay. And then they flash back to points on the campaign to explain what's currently happening. But his campaign and his first year in office are not part of the show.
We missed the first year. Yeah. Well, I would argue we only missed like the first like month, 2 months, because really she had left. And then will we pick up? Well, anyway, you see a flashback of the first election cycle. You see the second one, which is very tragic and very problematic for several reasons that we will get into later down the road. And of course, you see the fictional election of the first female president of the United States of America. And
which the one thing they might have actually predicted right is it probably will be a Republican woman. So they're probably right on that front.
I think so. I really do think that the first female president will be a Republican. I hope that she's like Mellie. Mellie was pretty progressive to be a Republican woman. So there's that. Fitz has been shot at this point. Olivia returns to the White House is where our story takes place. And I think a couple of things, because I did go back and rewatch this episode, and I have so many more thoughts in regards to how I'm digging my heels in on Mellie, on my stance on Mellie, about the martyr that she is. The saint, would-be saint that she is.
That is bullshit. But Mellie made a lot of sacrifices. No one is going to deny that she did that. She also, at some point, decided that she is going to get her shit off too. And that is fine. But literally, the next episode, she proves my fucking point. She forges his name. Mellie, again, made a lot of sacrifices, is also self-serving. Not only did she forge his name, she also, I believe the next episode, delivers their child early in order, again, to stick it to him and get her rocks off, which is fine. Mellie made a lot of sacrifices. No one is denying the sacrifices she made. But to say that she's a martyr, or that, as she says, I gave up everything for you, I sacrificed everything for you, is a lie. It's bullshit. And I'm like, you got me agreeing with this man when he has to point in your face and remind you that you wanted to be first lady just as much as he wanted to be president. You were thinking about yourself, and that's fine. But let's not lie about that and pretend that's not the case. But please go on with your description of how Mellie sacrificed everything. I sacrificed everything for you. Lies.
You know what? When we get to our Mellie episode, I'm bringing the facts. I'm bringing the receipts. Because, you know, my favorite thing about Melly is, and this, I know this is gonna hurt. There is no, I think until Melly starts running for president, and then we'll get back to this episode, there's no point in time in which she doesn't drag Olivia for being the mistress. Like, I mean, I think she at every point, and I think those are some of my favorite, just like, it's just such a very hood adjacent of Melly, because every time she sees Olivia, she constantly reminds that lady that you are the side chick, and she loves calling that lady a whore. I can't begin to describe just the literal gangsterness of Melly. I also want to be Cyrus Bean. Cyrus Bean, hands down, after Rowan, aka Eli Pope, are my two favorite characters. I see the way that they see the world, and I will not be explaining further. Cyrus Bean really did get the short end of the stick towards the end of Scandal. And now I don't think I like the way his character ended. And I'm going to have to wrestle with that. That's just a little insider. Feel free to debate us in the comments, but back to the episode. So this is the episode, like we said, where Fitzgerald Grant III gets shot. The press secretary also gets shot. Britta Kagan, she unfortunately meets her demise. RIP to her. But we also, during this time, are seeing flashbacks. How did we get to where we are? What is the evolution? So we start to see more of the evolution of Olivia and Fitz's relationship and their affair. They also found a very interesting way to write why can't I think of what it is? Not the inaugural
100-day speech.
The 100-day speech. That was hilarious. But you just kind of see this wrestle, this internal struggle that Olivia has, because she's very much in love with Fitz, but she's just, you know, she wants to do right, so she claims at this point. And one of the key points, and we'll land here, is that they decide to have sex in the office on inauguration. She could have chose to do anything productive with her life, but she chose to stay back.
Hold on. She decided that she didn't want to go to the inaugural parties at night, which is fair. As someone who, regardless of win or lose, was not going to any election night parties in November, like, I get it. You're tired. You see these people all day. You're not trying to be with them for another 5, 6, 7 hours into the night if you don't have to. She also knew that there was something that she would prefer to be doing, which was her man. So she decided to hang around. She told her staff, that is her man. He says it in the episode. He said, I belong to you. You control
not
me.
Not under God and not under law. In their dreams.
Doesn't matter. Possibly. Doesn't matter. He says, you control me. You absorb my day. Okay? That is what Fitz says. So she decides to stay back. She tells her staff, including Britta at the time, you know, head on, go party, put your dresses on, go have fun. And then, you know, they decide to fool around in the Oval. But Tom Larson is clearing the video footage the next morning and sees it and even asks and tells the president, like, hey, by the way, you know, we have cameras everywhere and every night someone reviews the footage and it's not always going to be me. And then the president wasn't like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, please don't tell my wife. All he said is, oh, so where aren't there cameras? And then you will see how that translates. The thing I like about the flashbacks on Scandal is that 9 times out of 10, they like immediately translate to something in present day on the show that you're like, oh, that makes a lot more sense now. So in that case, you like see on the show, like he's like, oh, where aren't there cameras? And you'll realize, oh, in present day, when Fitz and Olivia talk, they always go stand in a very tiny corner of the window of the Oval, because that's where they're not cameras.
And this further proves Papa Pope's point. A boy. A grown boy. Because you didn't think, okay, we need to think this through better. I need to do X, Y, Z. He said, what are my options? And now you have this black queen standing in some tight ass corner for the rest of the series so y'all can talk. But that's neither here nor there.
True. They also talk in Vermont. And we also see on that episode they used to get away to, what's it called, up in Maryland. Oh my God, what is that place called? Why is the name escaping?
Camp David?
Camp David. No. They used to do little getaways at Camp David. So, you know,
that's very cheap. Like my dude.
Anywhere that he uses money or pays for something is public record. Would you really prefer that he's out here getting hotel rooms, cutting up checks at the Capitol Hilton?
I'm just saying, in retrospect, it's very cheap. But go ahead.
I mean, her father told her there were a lot of things you could have asked for. To be first lady was very mediocre of you. So.
Listen.
But.
That's what happens when you try to be in love.
I mean, hey. The heart wants what it wants. A lot of, I would say this episode and the next episode, like, there's a lot of the flashbacks. It gives you kind of an idea into Defiance and Lindsay Dwyer, who on the show is known as Quinn Perkins, and like all the stuff going on there, the explosion, how she gets set up, how Verna becomes a Supreme Court justice, like all of those little pieces are like starting to get put together, because the episode before you learn about Defiance and like how we got to that part of, you know, as you mentioned last week when you were like, well, they win the election. And I was like, no, they didn't. They big lost. But these flashbacks both show how the first like 100 days of the White House went, and some of the little things like Olivia giving Fitz the pin that I think belonged to, was it FDR?
Eisenhower.
And then him taking her to like go touch the Constitution, her saying that their relationship feels a little Sally Hemings, Thomas Jefferson.
No, which is wild to say to your white lover as a black man.
That's absolutely insane. I could never. I mean, if I said that to a guy I was dating, we're not dating anymore.
Like, don't you call your man a slave?
If I said that to a guy I was dating, we're not dating anymore. I'm saying that to you as like a way to signify the end of our relationship. I would just not be comfortable anymore.
Because at that point, if that's what your relationship signals to, especially if you're in an interracial relationship, there are just certain things that
I could never.
There are just certain dynamics already at play. But I just want you to know, like, one, I just want to break this really down really quickly. First of all, Fitz's name is Fitzgerald Grant III. So it's giving old money. It's giving old California money. And then not only that, he comes from, we know that he comes from money. He's a third. He's white. He's well educated. He is a Harvard lawyer.
Big daddy.
They call him Big Jerry. Like, what the hell? So you tell that man it gets slave master and bed maiden is crazy.
She said to him, I'm feeling a little Sally Hemings, Thomas Jefferson right now. And I was like, oh my God. And the wild thing is, even Fitz knew that was fucked up. He was like, how the fuck are you going to say that to me? He was hot.
Called her out. It was just like, don't you ever say no wild shit like that. No.
Ever again. Don't you ever degrade our relationship like that. Because I don't care who you are, you refer to this man as a slave master, and you are a slave. I don't care if you were trying to be disrespectful or you were just trying to get, like, you were trying to get out of his face and get him to leave you alone. I understand when my man came through and said, no, you control me. You control me. I was like, please.
Which wasn't as romantic as he thought it was. It wasn't the bar that he thought it was. Mostly because as you all continue to listen to the show, and hopefully if you haven't seen Scandal, as you watch Scandal, you will come to find, and I'm very solid on this point, Fitzgerald is a very sassy man. He is the start of the sassy man apocalypse. And I just want to put that out there. I'm standing 10 toes down on that. I'm staying on business on that whole situation. He thought it did.
I think that there are many, we are changing the nature of this podcast. I think for a lot of Black women, I will include myself in this, who are at the top of their game, who are like leading in fields, who get to make decisions all day, every day, 24/7, are managing people, managing product, managing services, managing projects, managing strategy. Having a powerful man be like, you control me, like, I'm here for you, is gorgeous. Was Jake better at it in a different way? Absolutely. But Jake wasn't president.
I want to say something so bad, but I'm not, because I don't want it to get edited out. But I have such a bar, I'm going to keep it to myself. I will say this, that as
a woman... Save it till we get enough viewers so we can be on Patreon.
I will say that as a woman who does make a lot of decisions, who is in and out of meetings, I will just say that I prefer Jake, because I want to come into the presence of a man and turn my brain off. Because if I have to keep thinking for the group, why are you here every time? Olivia and Fitz are together. And I think that
people want thinking both
for the group.
But what we realized is that was not actually true, because when they started publicly dating, it was not what she thought it was. And she realized that as his mistress, yes, she gets to make a lot of decisions for him. She gets to do a lot of stuff. But as his partner, as his first lady, his first girlfriend, she gets relegated to a role that she realizes that she didn't actually like.
And what kills me about that whole part, and we're drifting away from this episode, but I do, because I want to highlight something about the VP. I will just say that I don't know how we still got to that part in the series. Because if my daddy, season 3, tells me, focus, please, for the group, can you focus? Can you get back on your tens? Get back in your motion? And I still end up being the girlfriend of... Shoot me.
I mean, like, a lot of stuff happened, including her getting kidnapped and Fitz almost starting World War III in order to save her. A lot happened between that speech and her being this man's public girlfriend. And then they broke up. So, like, you know,
it still did not work anyway. There's a part.
But again, there is a difference between being a mistress and being a wife.
We are, look, everybody ain't built for the Thunderdome. And that's why I'm like, again, put some respect on Melly, aka Mrs. Fitzgerald Grant III's name. Because listen, there's a lot that has to go. How dare you? I graduated top of my class at Harvard Law School. And she said it.
Right.
She's like,
and she knows how to punch her ticket to the top. She could have. She could have. And then she realized at one point that she could be doing anything, but by being this man's wife, she will get to be first lady.
She realized that after a lot of trauma and a lot of drama with that sassy man. But I digress.
Please. Please.
You know what? We're going to hold it. I do want to highlight, because there's an important piece. There was, in the drama of Scandal, one of the things that I've always loved about Scandal is that there's a lot of drama, a lot of hyperbole, which are the makings of a good show, but it's still grounded in a lot of truth and accuracy. And during this episode, you do see that Cyrus and Vice President Langston get into it about her constitutional role, because Sally gets up
Sally's
in that.
Sally's like, I'm coming in there, swear
she
me
lands.
In.
That was the most Suge Knight move you'd ever seen. She got up in that. She's like, is this person a Marine? She's like, I am Commander in Chief, and we are landing on the South Lawn. It was very like, stay scheming. Sally Langston put on the shiesty and was ready to go to war. And I love Cyrus B, because Cyrus B is standing 10 toes down.
Was ready to die. He said, "Hey, who are you?
You?
You are nothing. You are nothing. You're not even mentioned in the Constitution. You're not even mentioned in the Constitution. What are you doing here?" He went off. And I will say, in terms of life reflecting art, Sally acted very differently than our forever VP last summer, when people were calling for Biden to step aside, Biden to do this, Biden to do that. You didn't see the VP anywhere except for by her president's side, 10 toes down, as people should have been, and minding her business. She was like, this man is the president of the United States. Y'all need to shut the fuck up and keep it moving.
And I will say, I do, as to relate that relationship in real life, I know there's a lot of scuttlebutt behind the scenes about what role VP Harris played in her ascension, what role she did or didn't play to become the nominee. I think that will always be for public fodder at Politico dinner tables to discuss until the end of millennia. But I do think that she always played her cards right and just saying, hey, for as long as he says that he's running, I'm the vice president and that's my place. And I do think in some ways people say that it is something that hurt her in the end, is that she was fiercely loyal. She did stick to talking points and she didn't throw him under the bus when it came to questions.
Like, what do you say? Like, I feel like people are acting, forgetting the fact that President Biden, up until 9 hours ago, was the sitting president of the United States. So all these people coming out being like, oh, I think he should step aside. Oh, I don't know if he can do it. Oh, I have questions about his mental facilities. And, you know, sometimes he'd be drifting off. Sometimes he'd be doing all this. This man is the sitting president of the United States. He has hands on the nuclear codes. What the fuck are you talking about? To say that he can't run again is to say that he shouldn't be the president now. You can't have it both ways. So I'm like, all these Congress people, all these people being like, oh, he needs to step aside. He can't do it. Or George Clooney, who, that is my husband. But George, what were you talking about? You were at a meeting with him and he didn't seem all the way there? Babe.
You don't seem all the way there. You got twins at 63.
He is sitting. Yo, if George Clooney said he wanted to give me a baby today, I'd say have a baby by me, baby, be a millionaire. Let's not get crazy. Let's not talk about who George is as a person. I just think that to say like that it hurt her, I don't think there's any, what was anyone in that situation supposed to do? Because at the end of the day, if you're implying that he doesn't have all of his mental facilities or he shouldn't run for re-election, then he probably shouldn't be president. Like, if you don't think he can make it 4 years, whatever you're seeing that is telling you that probably means he shouldn't be president now. And then on top of that, how long have you
been president anymore?
Right. But then it's also like, how long have you been seeing it? was he in the right state of mind when he made this decision? What about that decision? What about when he did
this? Those are the questions, like, that, those were the questions she was being asked.
Right. And she stayed loyal because what are you supposed to do? I feel like there's no, like, what are you supposed to do in that situation? You're supposed to stick to the talking points and keep it pushing because you're not going to get me caught up.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, you know, unlike Sally Langston, I think VP Harris always, it's something I admired about her. I think it's something that is very, for those who like to question her blackness, that's a very black trait. When we down, as a black woman, we down. We riding
down.
Come on. You're making us look bad, but I'm going to come fix it. Like, let's just get this done. And I think, you know, to go back to the episode so we can kind of round this out, that was just such a very interesting thing. It was such a play for power. It's the one time, and you see the flashback to when Sally didn't get her Supreme Court pick, and so you see why she makes the moves that she makes. And
do you know what the difference is? Sally never was down for Fitz. No. At the end of the day, she did what she had to do because she was going to lose the, like, she was losing the primary. She didn't have any choice.
She lost.
But she lost. Right. She lost the primary. But she knew what Billy was doing. She knew all that shit that was going on. Like, she was never loyal to Fitz or loyal to the administration. Sally was always loyal to Sally. Sally was loyal to her constituents, as she liked to call them. Honestly, Sally was given MAGA before MAGA was MAGA. Like, that's who Hollis Doyle ends up being the Trump candidate. But Sally was always loyal to Sally and loyal to her mission. And that's as far as she was going for Fitz, as if it benefited her. And at the end of the day, I think that's the difference, in that the VP also ran against the president. Like, they were on opposing sides at one point, but then they came together. I also think it's the difference between Democrats and Republicans, and we're keeping it up $150. Or if there is mess on our side between a president and a vice president, it just doesn't become as, like, publicly contentious. Because I feel like even Dick Cheney and Baby Bush, you could see there was a bit of, like, public tension between the two.
You gotta, like, put some respect on GW's name.
Baby Bush is wild. And if he saw me, he'd be like, Michelle, is that you? You've changed. You're not so much younger.
Is Michelle. I am on the campaign. He is like, where is my boo? He's like, bring her. He is sick.
He is heartbroken. He's like, it's been twice now that we've all had to gather. You haven't been here.
You know, that leads us into our next episode, our next segment of Tonight at 5 on Twice as Good. Welcome. So we're going to take this nice and smooth, and then it gets a little rough towards the end, as Tina Turner would say. Sometimes you all like a little to be a little smooth, and sometimes you all like it a little rush. Me too.
And we roll it, ooh, roll it, ooh, Trump's inauguration.
That's exactly what we're about to start at. So MJ, give us your, like, 30-second, like, top-of-mind thoughts on the inauguration.
It was giving white. It was giving very white. And honestly, it was just giving white. Like, I'm not an inauguration watcher. I was there in 08. It was cute. 2012, I like volunteered that weekend, but I was also like, this is bullshit. I ain't never doing this again. Why am I volunteering MLK weekend for an inauguration? Y'all need to pay people to do this. You raise enough money. 2016, I went to Jamaica. 2020, was not in the area, was not watching it. So I went back to my tradition of not watching it because I don't remember ever watching the inauguration before 2008. Like, I don't even remember that being a thing. So I was like, I'm not watching this. I don't particularly care. Like, let's see what happens. But my family decided to watch it and were immediately just like, oh my God. First of all, it was indoors. And it wasn't even like, it was cold, but it wasn't that cold. So, because there's video of JFK standing outside, no coat, in like 22 degree weather back in the 40s. Obama was outside both times. The first time it was cold as fuck. Like, it was brick city out there. And he was outside. So, holding it indoors, personally, I feel like had a lot more to do with some of the other people who are on the stage and safety concerns. Because, you know, not to call anyone out, but a cousin of a state elected of ours was, you know, they want to make sure that no one is inspired when all these people are standing on the same stage. I feel like that's what it really came down to, and that's why they moved it indoors. But it was very lacking of melanin inside that room. But I also saw on the stage that you had the CEO of TikTok, because they did that cute little fake TikTok band this weekend, Facebook/Meta, and X. Oh, and Jeff Bezos. So the little oligarchy is coming together, standing behind him. Very, very nice. Very cute. Can't wait for the next 4 years of whatever the fuck this is going to be. What did you think?
I thought it did give Fitzgerald Grant III, and it gave very much Country Club before integration.
Okay. I was like, where are we going with this? But okay, I see you.
I do think that the speech was better than I thought it would be.
Yeah. We're entering the golden age. Is that it? Golden age, golden era?
I didn't say I agreed with what was in the speech. I thought the speech was better than I thought it would be. I do think that besides Donald Trump Jr. and Eric, Trump has very pretty kids. He really did his big one with Ivanka, Tiffany, and Barron. I thought they looked very Anglo.
So the kids angelic who don't look like him. I'm just saying, Ivanka looks like her mother. Tiffany looks like Marla Maples. And Barron looks like Melania. So the kids who don't look like him. And that's okay.
And I want the VP, former VP Harris, if she doesn't do anything else with her life, I want her to give us, specifically me, a lesson in keeping a straight face. Masterclass. I'm like,
the face was giving no emotion in the best way possible.
In the black pantsuit, it gave very casual. I'm gonna be honest with you. It gave very casual on that side.
It gave, I'm not wasting a good outfit on this.
And then Hillary Clinton gave this, like, they both need, because she her had laugh. This permanent smile. She's like,
yes, but the laugh that she gave, the little grin, when he said that he's renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, I was like, honestly, I understand. Like, is it appropriate to laugh? No, because this could be like the end of America. But I also understand, because how could you not laugh? You and your husband were in and out of public service for over 40 years. and you are standing behind a man who's talking about how he's going to rename the Gulf of Mexico. That's like one of the first things he lists off as president. Right. One of the president 10 minutes. Hasn't even been there 10 minutes. And he's like, I'm renaming the Gulf of Mexico. You have to laugh. You got to be like, Bill, we need to get the fuck up out of here.
But see, here's the problem. And this is why, y'all, if nothing else comes of this podcast, we really need y'all to listen, subscribe, and download and follow us on Instagram, X, Blue Sky, and any other social media platform, because we need to be rich enough to move. Because the only thing, the saving grace for everybody else on that stage is that in the back of their mind, they're just like, I have stocks, bonds, and other things. I can get liquid real fast and get up out of here. And I'm not there yet. I know one day I will be, where I can look at hopefully my future husband and be like, Aaron, Mr. Pierre, babe, we're living in the UK. You can come back for work.
Oh.
You can come back for work. Like, but we, I'm not, me and my, as well, for me and
be
my
careful, host, because you see how they're ending, they're trying to end birthright citizenship, so don't go pop out them kids over there. Make sure you have them here.
Listen, I wouldn't mind my babies being UK babies. Like, listen.
Wow. It is not that simple in the UK, because they don't have birthright citizenship there, so it might take a minute.
I'm at this point, I'm willing to stay.
Canada. I will be right there. Listen, Justin Trudeau can't be one of a kind. There has to be another. I will be in there. I'm out.
My only problem, so I just want to highlight a couple of things from his speech. The New York Times said he painted a grim picture. I think that depends on who you're talking to. I will say, for me, for a party that put out Project 2025, for the Gulf of America to be a priority that you throw out there as a standing ovation line, it was a waste of, it was just a waste of air, and it was a waste of space on a page. I didn't think that was something that you needed to throw out. Of course, you know, I did think what was interesting was he is allowing those who were forced out of the military service because they refused to take the COVID vaccine and giving them full back pay. I don't know how many people. I'm assuming that's a very small group of people. I could be wrong. I will say, and I'm not going to speak too much on this because there's a lot of nuance behind some of my views, but I will say, as the child of 3 Army colonels, since retired, I understood his stance on some of the things he said in regards to the military in terms of process and procedure and in the culture of the military. Maybe one day we'll get my mom or like my dad or my stepdad, if they like me that much, to come on and kind of explain just what it's like to be in the military and why. A lot of Americans don't know this, but before policies are actually pushed out on the American people, they're actually tested in the military.
Very much so. And it's not only policy, it's also medicine, scientific research. Like during the 50s, they were out here testing bombs and chemical warfare on military participants, many a thing.
Anthrax.
The internet.
My mom was
anthrax.
But I was one of the first people to get the anthrax vaccine, gas, chemical things. So I will say, as like a child who, from the time that I opened my eyes to the time until I was like 23, 24, all I have known is the United States Army via my parents. I will say I do have thoughts about using the military as this experimental population. I get why they do it. I mean, you get a diverse group of people. It's a subset of the population. So it's a very controlled environment. I don't think best thing. Doesn't make it okay. So I'll put a pin in that. I think that we also now know that there are only two genders. I'm interested to see how that will work, because in the state of Maryland, you are allowed to check off the gender of your choice. We've passed laws surrounding this. So I'm interested to see if he's actually going to pass a national law about gender.
I assume that means it'll be at the federal level. Like, if you're applying for a federal job, there will only be two genders available. What I do think will end up happening is that companies that have added other gender options besides like cisgender, like male and female, or really just male, female, they don't even put cis, like they will feel like, oh, now that the president has said there's only two genders, we're getting rid of all this other shit. And we're just going to go back to male and female. And should this end up in court, we're going to point to the executive order. Similar to what we saw with DEI, where as soon as Trump advanced one, all of a sudden DEI programs were no longer a priority. They were like, guess we don't need those anymore. So I think a lot of the stuff that we saw today will just be, okay, he's going to say this thing, maybe write an executive order to accompany it, and it'll be a federal related situation because so many states have their own laws and this is a party that claims states' rights. Then companies that are in alignment with them will follow suit.
Yes. He also talks about there is now, speaking of executive orders, he also declared, I believe as after the inauguration concluded, as of today, we officially have a state of emergency at the border. I'll just say this to everyone, to if you are an immigrant or you are the child of an immigrant, you know, please protect yourself. One of the things that we'll probably is try to uplift resources. If you're in Maryland, CASA de Maryland is a great resource for regardless of status, it's a great resource for immigrants and those coming into the country if you live in Maryland. I do believe they also cover Pennsylvania and other states in the South as well. So please review your status if you can. Make sure, and if you don't have resources, if you don't know a resource, CASA will also put you in touch with resources in your state. So whether you live in Maryland or not, it's just a great resource for immigrants in this country. That being said, we do have an immigration problem. And when I say we have an immigration problem, this is just something we refuse to get right. And either party has taken a swing at it. And it just feels like with every administration, it gets worse and worse and worse.
I don't know if that is, I think that is the narrative. I don't know if that's necessarily fair.
Okay.
Like, what country doesn't have an issue with people coming in? What modern former imperial power doesn't have an issue with people coming and not leaving? Like, the UK probably has less of that issue because it's an island. Australia probably has less of that issue, but like, they have issues with the Aboriginal people. Like, France has this problem. Germany has this problem. Belgium has this problem. Mexico has this problem. Like, Canada would probably have just as bad of a problem if you didn't have to pass through three, two, three, four other countries to get all the way up there. Like, any country where you can walk across a border to get into it is going to have immigration as an issue. And as we've said, the way that most people come into this country and end up staying is through flying. Like, I don't think the US's immigration issue is any better or worse than some of the other countries, like, than a lot of the other countries we compare ourselves to. I think the difference is that we propagandize it. We turn it into a talking point and like a back and forth for political points. When it became an issue in Germany, the amount of migrants that were coming into the state, into the country, they came up with a legislative solution because they had an immediate problem that their resources were not solving. If immigration was actually as bad as the pundits and our politicians made it seem whenever it became a talking point, we would have actually solved it. But I don't think it's actually as bad as they're making it out to be. I think it's an issue that you can hit people back and forth on the border. And the parts of it that are actually bad aren't the things they want to fix. Like, it takes way too long to get a green card. It takes way too long to go through the asylum process. That's not the parts they're talking about fixing. They're complaining about people literally crossing the border. And that's where I'm like,
what do you say? How do you refute the crime pieces? Because there have been instances, and I don't know the statistical relevance or how many instances have occurred, but there have been prominent instances of crime between those who were formerly of violent organizations who have come to America. I haven't looked into all these cases, so I want to make sure I choose my words carefully, so I don't know what's all occurred, but that is something that the Republican Party is concerned about. They're saying, hey, we're letting in factions of MS-13, we're letting in other factions of violent groups from Central and South America and Mexico. They're coming and they are attacking our citizens, and citizens are dying at the hands of these people. What do we say about, because that's, you know, that is an issue. And so people are concerned about that. So what are we saying to refute that?
But what are we refuting? Are we refuting that, like, in a batch of 1,000 people who are let into the country or come across the border, a percentage of them are going to commit crimes? Or are we refuting that, like, our current system doesn't screen for criminals, right? Like, should our system screen for criminals or people who've committed crimes in other countries? Absolutely. I think there are some, like, technological things that probably need to be fixed, because obviously we don't have the same, like, not every country has the same fingerprinting system, all that kind of stuff. But I don't think, if our asylum systems worked faster, if, like, catch and release didn't have to be as long of a wait period because we were processing people quickly, you wouldn't catch someone, have to release them because there's no space for them, and you're probably not going to hear their case for a year and a half, and then find out 6 months later when you finally start processing their paperwork that they committed a crime in Honduras or Guatemala, like, whichever country in Central America you want to point to. But I also think that those cases are tragic. It is terrible that that happens. I've yet to see evidence that the crime rates in the immigrant community are any significantly higher than they are in any community.
I agree. There is
a question of, like, if you came here for a better life, or you came here to seek opportunity, and you are harming our people, and for folks listening, I have our people in quotes, you shouldn't be here. And if that's a thing, like, you should leave, and you shouldn't have been allowed to come here in the first place. So when it does happen, it becomes this, oh, our immigration system is broken, we're letting criminals in. There are criminals next door to you. So what are we doing about those criminals? Like, I don't think the rates of criminality are higher amongst people who cross the border or overstay their visa than they are amongst Tom, Dick, and Harry from down the street. one just makes for a better story for the news.
Okay. I mean that's fair. I just ask as someone who understands and knows labor policy at the same rate as everybody else. Now if you ask me about labor, we can get nasty. I mean,
what is more likely for someone who either crosses a land border or oversees your visa? What is more likely, that person is illegally taken advantage of, or that person hurts someone? I think it is more likely that they become a victim of wage theft, which is extremely prominent in labor, especially
all the time. Trades.
They are a domestic servant for someone who isn't getting paid well or treated properly and basically is a house slave. That they are paying taxes into a system they're not going to get any taxes out of. That they are getting underpaid and overworked. That they're not getting their overtime benefits. Like, I think it is much more likely that the system takes advantage of them than they take advantage of the system. But we don't want to talk about that.
I mean, well, we'll be talking about it. The new borders are, and the Trump administration, Trump did say that he is officially canceling the catch and release policy. That is no more. We have a state of emergency at the border. You know, Stephen Miller, who is now the deputy chief of staff for the Trump administration, is overseeing the immigration policy for the administration. So we will see. I think a lot of the scuttlebutt you saw between Elon Musk, Vivek, and the administration, I do think that they will lose that. I think they're going to lose that argument. It's going to be very interesting to see, because they have one stance and they have another. But we'll save that for our immigration episode. Some other things that I wanted to highlight in regards to the Trump inauguration was, one, just the way they had it set up. Like you said, it was inside. I ain't gonna hold you. I prefer it. The streets, I'm being honest with you.
The streets were quiet. I was driving around and I thought there was gonna be a lot of traffic because I was going into Virginia. And then I was like, oh,
ghost
the streets
town.
Are empty.
Ghost. How I was able to drive from Baltimore all the way to Virginia and back, no traffic. I said, you know what? That man may not be on to a lot, but he's on to something. Because I think
this is
fantastic.
It was giving peaceful and lack of shenanigans, which yes. I appreciate.
I was like, oh, this is great. Y'all should host it inside, put everybody in an arena. I just honestly like the setup. And I'll say this, and this is why I like the setup. Because I think you get more face-to-face time with the president than you would any other time. Like, he's walking down this cold road. They're pretending to wave and care about you.
Who gets more face-to-face time? There's only like 80 people in that room.
I'm saying, but having everybody at the arena, I like it, because I'm just saying he had a rally last night. He had a rally after the inauguration. And I think that's great. But I could be wrong. I just like that style of entertainment. Instead of us being cold, standing,
you see the word you use there? You see the word you use there? You like that style of entertainment. This is not entertainment. This is a constitutional duty to transfer power. And that's the problem. That this man... No. Power was transferred to him. He has never transferred power to anyone. Power was transferred to him.
He did miss the last one. I'm saying as someone who, while you will never see...
Enjoys good entertainment.
Yeah. Well, the reason why you'll never see Big DK at an inauguration unless there is a seat with my name on it is because I'm not standing outside for nobody. I serve no king, and the only person I serve is God. And so you'll never see me outside. Absolutely not. If I'm at an inauguration, there's a nice seat. I have a nice fur, and I'm giving cunt face beat. Body banging. You'll never see me stand outside for anybody.
but not real fur, because I don't want paint thrown on me by PETA.
So. Yeah, I have a nice faux fur situation at the home.
We're giving faux.
Like a nice, it looks real because I don't want nobody clocking me, but it's not real.
Well,
I will, but I will say I just like it better. You didn't like it better? You don't, okay.
No, but speaking of PETA and entertainment, since that's what we're talking about at this point, there was a lot of controversy around who decided to show their ass this weekend in D.C.
That crypto ball had gotten a chokehold, didn't it?
Between the crypto ball, I mean, let's run through some of the people who were here this weekend. Nelly, the question of, it was not hot in here, but he was here. Snoop Dogg was at that crypto ball DJing. I could see him spinning. Don't think about it, boy, leave her alone. Ooh-ee. Because, you know, for those of you who don't know, Charlie Wilson, a beloved DC fave. Carrie Underwood, who was probably, like, the most prominent controversial person who was signed up. She sang, I believe it was America the Beautiful. And people were very upset. Personally, I think this is just a reminder to us all that Kelly Clarkson is the original and therefore the American Idol. Because Jesus clearly has taken a different wheel than we thought.
Oh my God. Do we know who sung the national anthem?
It was some random person. I know who that person was. I was like, I don't know you. I mean, they couldn't get Beyonce, so, and you couldn't get Taylor Swift. I bet you if Taylor Swift did not endorse the VP, they would have asked her to, they would have asked her to sing. 100%. 100%. They would have been like, this is our Beyonce. We have to get her to sing. But alas, she's a cat lady. Rascal Flatts, which what hurts the most is that they sang for this man and were quoted. We're quoted saying that it was an honor, that they were grateful. I said, this cannot be the same band that gave me You Don't Look a Day Over Fast Cars and Freedom. You don't look a day over supporting racism and fascism. But that's fine.
Oh my God.
The Village People. YMCA. Mind you, during the election, they were very anti-Trump using their song, but those streaming numbers came up. And they were like, you know what? Republicans wear sneakers too. So they were all excited to be at the inauguration and hit that YMCA, which, if people know the history of the YMCA and like why that YMCA like exists, very weird that like this song has been overtaken by the right. Very weird. Very, very weird.
It was used, fun fact, used for housing the poor and the homeless. So there's that.
If I remember correctly, the YMCA also started as a club for the Jewish community because yep. they weren't being let into the white country clubs. But, you know. And then Gavin DeGraw, which it's mostly just like, where did y'all go and dig this man up from? But I'm like, oh, maybe because he was feeling irrelevant. He wanted
Don't do that.
Bring prominence.
If you're going to read him, that's fine. But don't do that to that man. Please.
I'm just saying.
Please.
I don't want to be anywhere other than where he's not.
Sweet child.
Because who went and found Gavin DeGraw somewhere to have him come sing? Who? It reminds me of like when we do our local little state fairs and like county fairs. Like that's where I expect to see Gavin DeGraw. But lucky him, he was here for the inauguration this weekend. What I have thought. Oh yeah, go ahead.
I will just say, first of all, Gavin DeGraw is actually one of the reasons why I'm wearing a beanie right now, because that was his thing.
You wanted to be like Gavin. Is that why it's red? Because you wanted to really like mesh it together.
It's red because red is the official color of the National Nudes Guild dash CWA local 32035. So that is why the hat is red. Shout out to all my comrades and our president, Dan Gaber. I will tell you that Gavin DeGraw hurt because he was the first white boy I thought was cute. So it hurt just a little bit. No, actually, that's a lie. I'm sorry. It was Leonardo DiCaprio. It hurt. It did hurt the most, but it really did hurt my little pride. I will say, I listened to another live stream. Shout out to Jessie Wu. And she, I won't dig into everything that she brought up about Nelly, but I will say that I saw a comment on her live stream that had me cackling. And someone said when they saw Nelly perform at the Maryland State Fair, they knew he was in financial trouble.
100%.
So there's that. I think Snoop Dogg, I wouldn't even really care about Snoop Dogg because there's really only a handful of songs that I still listen to from him.
Snoop is the Shaq of music. Snoop is always just looking for a check. I mean, to him, a check is a check is a check.
I think that my issue was that he was so anti. And the problem that I have specifically through the Black or African-American lens, as Trump, he loves that AA. The thing that I have with this is that 8 years ago, Chrisette Michelle did the same thing. And I know people like to debate back and forth about how relevant she was, but Chrisette Michelle did have a steady career in music. Like, she could put out an album, she would get decent numbers, she could at least go on tour. I don't think people are
going to do Beast 2 and or Soulja Boy, because Soulja Boy was also there. I don't think people are going to do them any differently. I think the difference is where they are in their careers. Chrisette Michelle was going up, and Nelly is going down.
Not even that. The problem is that as a Black, I will say the level of Snoop Dogg and Nelly, Soulja Boy, who is a fun song at weddings and birthday parties, I will never receive the amount of backlash and the amount and will never see the level of consequences that Chrisette Michelle, Chrisette Michelle has done several interviews where she was like, I had to figure out what I was going to do because I was living check. She said check to check is generous. Like, I think at one point she had to go and get a regular job because she could not get hired anywhere. Like, she just has started putting some pieces of her career back together. And I would like to also note that Pastor Travis Green, very popular Black gospel singer, worship leader, who also performed with her, literally got no backlash. Absolutely none. And that's my whole problem, is it's specifically with us. Like, we love to eat our own, specifically Black women. And Snoop Dogg and Nelly will not see they won't go living check to check. While their net worth is very different from where Chrisette Michelle is and was, they just won't see the dip. Like, oh girl literally had to go get a regular job for a minute before she could get back in the music business. And that's my whole thing with this. I'm just like, I hope y'all just hold them accountable the way you drug that Black lady.
I agree.
If that is where you go, then that's fine.
And I think that you also have to know your base and you have to know where your money's coming from. I think, take the example of Toby Keith. Rest in peace. Toby Keith was a Democrat, was also a huge supporter of the troops, was a huge supporter of Obama, and performed at Trump's inauguration in 2017 and got a lot of backlash for it. And he was like, to perform at any inauguration is an honor, period. Like, that's the end of it. That's the end of my statement. Got a lot of backlash, became like a decently prominent Trump supporter, but like wasn't really like supportive of like the things he was saying. Was just like, he allowed me to perform the inauguration. That was an honor like of my life, blah, blah, blah. Ends up passing away. He was still able to make money and sell out concert seats because his base overlapped a lot with who Trump supporters were anyway. There's a reason they had a lot of country singers there, because a lot of these people already have a lot of Trump supporters in their base. Like, Nelly and Snoop aren't going to lose a lot because white people love Nelly and white people love Snoop. Chrisette Michelle fucked up because she was still on her way up, and a lot of the people who supported her were never going to be okay with you performing at the inauguration because your support base was Black women. So I think, like, you're an entertainer. You literally only make money when people pay to see you or pay for you to do things. So for you to go perform for free at the inauguration in 2017 was not in the best interest of your pockets, because you should be able to go on your Spotify and your Apple Music and see who streams your shit and realize that those people are not overlapping with the people who would be excited for you to be performing at the MAGA inauguration. And that's where
when I found out she didn't get paid for that gig, I was highly disappointed, because you always got go get your bag. Same point.
Right.
You have like, to go get your bag. Fucked up
because the people who support her were never going to be okay with her doing shit like that. So why would you do it?
Got it. Okay. I mean, I see what you're saying. I think that you did bring up a point that I want to explore a little bit, and that is it an honor? Regardless, to be asked, because we did touch on this a little bit on the first episode, where we were just like, there was a time in DC where regardless of who was in the White House, there were just certain things that you could show up at and nobody would care. Christmas parties, like anything that had more of a social lean to it, inauguration balls, like any, there used to be a time where regardless if you were a Democrat or a Republican, these are more
drinking is social
things. Yeah. Like,
drinking is both nonpartisan and bipartisan. We all like to have a good time.
So now, you know, people are performing at the inauguration used to be the gig. Like, you wanted this on your resume.
Yes and no. Because I think performing at the inauguration, one, I don't really remember what inaugurations looked like before Obama. So I don't know if performing at the inauguration like 30 years ago was like type, like hot shit. Like they were trying to get Selena in 1992 when she couldn't make it. Like, I don't fucking know. I don't know what it looked like in 92. I don't know if in 1972 or whatever, Nixon was out here trying to get like the top performer. Like, he was trying to get Michael Jackson, and Michael Jackson was like, oh, the cold weather is not good for my throat. Like, I have no idea what these
used to look Johnny like. Cash did show up to the Nixon White House.
Sure, but Johnny Cash probably aligns more with most of the people who are on this list today.
No, actually, they had beef. Him and Nixon actually had beef. It's actually well documented, but that's neither here nor there.
Nixon was Nixon. But, like, I think if we're looking pre-Obama, when people talk about, like, huge performances, most people talk about the Super Bowl. They're showing clips from the Super Bowl, whether it's of people singing the national anthem or doing, like, a halftime performance. So I don't know what being asked to sing at the inauguration used to look like, because I also don't know if it always had all these concerts and like all this other shit outside of the ball and the gala in the evening. I think that everything involving everything in DC is extremely political and extremely polarized now. So do I think organically, innately take all of the other stuff out of it? Being asked to perform at an inauguration is an honor. You're being asked to perform at a constitutional swearing in, a transfer of power, and what is supposed to be a showing of a peaceful democracy. But this is America, 24-hour social media. You are performing at a particular president's inauguration. There's no way, like, Trump was not going to ask Beyonce to perform. Trump was not going to ask Cardi B, right? And it's not because they're Black women, it's because they supported the VP. So I think it's become so polarized that it does mean something if you say yes, because it means something to your fans. It just does. Whether it's, oh, we're so happy that you're there, thank you so much for supporting our president, or it's like, how dare you do that? I mean, Kim K's getting backlash today because she said Melania's outfit is cute. And people are like, see, we told y'all, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, first of all, Melania looked halfway like she belonged in the Ronald McDonald criminal crew, and halfway like she was going to the funeral. Like, that was what her hat and her outfit was giving.
I'm going to be honest with you.
It was giving hamburgers.
I was disappointed. I was very disappointed because Melania has done better. And I was extremely disappointed that she, you know, because I'm going to just be honest. I'm always going to give you, side note, y'all, I'm always going to give you, regardless of party, if a good idea is a good idea, it's a good idea. And if an outfit is cunt, the outfit is cunt. I'm going to just say that Melania 2017 deaded the game. And y'all,
she wanted to be there. In 2017, she wanted to be there. This time, she did not. That's why she wore that wild ass hat. And when he tried to kiss her, it was like, doink. It couldn't get kissed.
So, okay.
That shit was on purpose.
Here's what I'm saying. Okay, so I just want to, I'm going to interject. So Beyonce was at Baby Bush's, God damn it. I hate you. Beyonce was at DW's inauguration because she was in Destiny's Child at the time, and they did perform. Jessica Simpson did perform. Ricky Martin did perform as well. Hillary Duff performed at the O5. My girl JoJo performed.
Yes,
Kelsey Grammer.
Yes, Hillary Duff
was also there. So I will just say Ethel Innes, a very, very, very famous, accomplished singer. If you don't know who that is, look her up. Black woman, performed at Nixon's. She did the national anthem. So that's when I said, that's like what I say. The inauguration used to be the gig. Like, you want this on your resume. Yeah. Like, there are just certain things that you want. Like you said, the Super Bowl, presidential inauguration. Like, there are just certain things that gigs.
Partying they don't used to be nonpartisan. And it's so, just not anymore.
Because I'm interested, like, what the streets look like of DC right now. I'm still standing ten toes down behind y'all. We all need to be in the Capitol arena somewhere for all the inaugurations. Have a nice little rally before, a nice little post rally.
The streets are empty.
And then let's meet up at the inauguration. And I think like that, like, but now we're at a point where if you perform at one that says something about who you are as an American, it says something about what your beliefs are. And it saddens me because, like, this should be the one time, like, for at least 72 hours. And I mean, leading up and post inauguration, we should all just be able to be like, fuck it. We gonna have a good time. That man who works at the RNC is super fine. He gets on my nerves any other time, but the champagne is flowing. I'm looking cute.
Oh,
and I'm waxed.
You're just giving me an example. I was like, who the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. I was very concerned. I agree with you. And honestly, I'm not gonna lie. Outside of saying that they were very grateful and gracious and honored to be able to perform, I haven't heard Rascal Flatts say any crazy shit, so I'm going to keep jamming out the God Bless the Broken Road. I ain't going to hold you. That's my fucking jam. I was listening to Rascal Flatts last weekend I was in Florida. Life is a Highway is my shit, because I want to ride it all night long. That song is my jam, okay? I don't really listen to Carrie Underwood like that as much anymore, because, like, I like her music, but she's no Shania Twain, you know? Like, she doesn't have the best, like, jam songs, okay? Man, I feel like
Ready to Go Girls.
Take the cake over.
Let's go, girl.
Right? It does! Like, when you try to turn up, like, that's what you're putting on. You're not talking about, I dug my keys into the side of his pretty little souped up four-wheel drive. He's just not.
Hey, be respectful. Be because that shit goes ham and forth. It is. Like, 3 minutes and 40 seconds.
It does.
Carrie Underwood was a Black woman because she said, I dug my keys into the car. I slashed them tires. I took out them headlights.
She took a Louisville Slugger to both headlights. I'm not saying it doesn't go hard. I'm saying that none of these artists, outside the Village People really switched shit up. That was kind of fucked up. But for the rest of these artists,
that's that man's theme song when he's with the arms and shit.
One thing to go from I don't want you to play your song, my song, and any of your shit, to like I'm a performer at your inauguration, because it's like, oh, once the money started looking a certain way, you didn't care anymore. So either care or don't. Like, you can't, like, don't you? Either you don't care or you care. But for these other people, I don't really listen to Nelly like that anyway. It sounds like he really out here, he needs to purr. Them kids are getting expensive. So I'm going to keep listening to Rascal Flatts, though. And I haven't listened to Gavin DeGraw in a long time. Except for that one song he has with Santana.
I agree. And I will just say this wasn't news to me. Like, I know a lot of you all cared about the performance, but wasn't news. Before we get to all things Maryland, I just want to highlight some other past inaugurations. So, of course, if you remember Obama's inaugurations really did set a standard for the modern era, I think, of inaugurations.
For celebrity.
Definitely for celebrity, because Beyonce sang at the inaugural ball. And then she came back and sang the national anthem. Of course,
Aretha,
you know,
was there.
She did My Country Tis of Thee, her, with the
Oh, and remember, they thought that she didn't actually sing it. I can't remember if it was 08 or 2012, where they were like, oh, it was a voice recording. You didn't actually sing it. You can, and she sang it right there at the press conference.
Oh, she yes, like, for me. Oh, they got on me.
So, never going to doubt my voice. Or was that the Super Bowl? It was one of the two. I can't remember.
So, yeah, what happened was Beyonce had gotten a cold.
And they always pre-record it because it was cold outside.
It's cold. No one's... So, if you know anything, and I know you you have a music minor, like, if anyone knows anything about music and... I laugh because, like, she's very anti-singing, so the fact that she's giving you guys all of these notes is hilarious to me. If you know anything about singing, your voice has to have certain things. There just have to be certain things in alignment for you to sing well. And if you know anything about
honey, it not being 10 degrees with a 15 negative wind chill outside, some basics.
No one is singing well in DC outside in the middle of January. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. I will say that So back to the story. So Beyonce, of course, did the pre-recording. She does a fantabulous job and she was stunning. I mean, stunning. She just has Blue Ivy. And then,
that was 2012. Yeah.
Yeah. So she like had Blue Ivy just the year before, because I believe Blue Ivy came 2011. Yeah, she came 2011. Yeah. Or was it a few weeks after 21? Anyway, she had just had the baby. And if you know, if you just dropped a baby within a year, it's cold outside, your voice is not giving. Like, that's just not the right sort of circumstances are not good. But also, everybody pre-records, because since the modern era, we have things to do and people have to be able to hear you in Timbuktu all the way in Southeast, because that's how far back Obama's like inauguration went. Like, you were lined up. Like, you were in Southwest.
It was packed. It was packed.
Hence, again, why you will never see me outside.
That's how you stay warm. You try to get in the middle of that little packed ass group.
And so then it was all this like back and forth about her voice. So she said, can you all please stand at the 2013? Was it the 2013 Super Bowl?
Yeah.
She does.
She sang she sang the national anthem at the inauguration in 2013. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, okay. Well, sorry. Then Blue Ivy was very much two at this point. One or two. And she did a great job. I think one of my, and this has nothing to do with inaugurations, but one of my favorite White House performances is Patti LaBelle's Christmas performance during the Bush era. Mm. When she did have her cue cards. It is,
you love talking about the Bush era. You love talking about Baby Debbie.
But no, because this lady didn't have her
talking about Baby Bush.
You know,
any chance you get, you'd be like, let's reminisce to 2001 to 2008 Baby Bush.
Because he's actually one of my favorite Republicans, because he was chaotic. And
is that what you would call two wars? Chaotic?
I said the best and worst ways, like very like, oh my god.
I just don't know if chaotic like covers what happened during his presidency.
I think if you had to sum it up,
John Boehner was chaotic. Kevin McCarthy, chaotic. The squad, when they like first got in and wanted to just do their own thing, chaotic.
Very chaotic.
Two major wars, a major terrorist attack, an entire change to how people fly, as well as your vice president basically being known as like Darth Vader. Chaotic doesn't cover it. I still cannot believe that man endorsed somebody I worked for, but it's neither here nor there.
You know what? And he's still living and prospering. God is still covering that man's life. So I don't know.
Evil. Because evil never dies. Evil never dies.
Speaking of chaotic, that leads us to our next segment in tonight on 5.
Howdy, y'all. It's your girl, Dallas DK Kyle. Thank you for tuning in to part one of this episode. Stay tuned for part two, dropping on Friday.